Why stand still when you can run headfirst into a wall? You're listening to the Jocular Pugilists.
All right, you may or may not know that my son has had Robert Plant-esque hair for the past couple of years. He's always had longer hair, but recently, and in some small part due to COVID, he's let his hair grow. He really looks like Robert Plant. He's blonde hair, blue eyes.
Very, very funny that you say that based on the video you showed me yesterday. That was great.
Yeah, definitely. So because of that, and because he hasn't gone through puberty yet, he can be mistaken for a girl, and it's no big deal. We're cool with that. It's not a big deal. I bring this up because a little while back, I was at his school, and a teacher, referring to my son, said, "Sir, your daughter..." I gently corrected her, said, "He's my son, not my daughter." And she absolutely freaked out.
Angry or?
No, not at all. She was mortified. She was, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry. Please understand it was a mistake. Please, it was just a mistake. Please understand." I think she was worried about mistaking the sexual identity of my son.
Wow.
In no small part due to the time we live in.
Right. Do you think she was worried about her job?
I do. I definitely do. I think that at least that's what I got from her reaction. The reason I bring this up is because today we're going to talk about changing social norms. We live in such a precarious time. It's so easy to unintentionally say the wrong thing. Something that would have been acceptable just a couple years ago is completely frowned on.
You know, I've found that because of my age, maybe, or maybe I've crossed that threshold where I'm like, I certainly don't want to disrespect anybody. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings ever, but I can't keep up with some of the stuff, you know? And it would be nice if, and for the most part, this has been the case, but it would be nice if people just would say, "Hey, that's not appropriate anymore," then, and let me kind of go, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know that," and that be the end of it. But sometimes that's not the end of it.
Yeah, they should have like a rule book that they publish every week or two with the new set of rules. And look, I have a young son. It's not even easy for a child to know what's right or wrong to say in a given situation. And one of the thoughts I had are these social norms biological? Are we imprinted with them when we're born, or are they learned? Do we have to be taught them? I feel like I have to clean house a little bit here because the very first podcast we ever released was about honesty. How honest can one be with someone else? And do different situations require different levels of honesty? That's not what we're talking about today. We're going to be talking about how social norms, decorum, politeness, respect, etiquette, manners, have all seemed to change and how they seem to be in a constant state of flux. Also, how treacherous it is if you don't know how to act in a certain situation. So I'll ask you the question, Phil. Do you think habits and manners are things that are biologically hardwired into our brain, or are they things that need to be learned?
I'm curious to your answer. I think it's something you need to be taught or learned clearly because it's changing all the time what good manners are, right? And so good manners today are different from good manners a few years ago.
Yeah, I think social norms, even over the past 3 years, have changed.
Yeah.
I'm actually really happy that I'm not dating now. It must be difficult to keep up with what the expected behavior is when you're dating.
Let's talk about that for a second. That's kind of chivalry, right? And I want to know, do you think it's still okay to be and act a little chivalrous, you know, when you're dating or when you're, or just out in general?
It's certainly more perilous now than it was when we were younger. Just opening the door for women can be a dangerous proposition now.
My take on it, it's evolved actually, but it's even more in the direction that I was. So I think it's perfectly fine to open the door for everybody. And I do. After thinking about this conversation before we were doing this episode, I was thinking, you know, what chivalry really is to me is putting somebody else's needs always in front of you. So therefore, if somebody is right behind me and I get to the door first, their need, let me let them go forward, whether it's a man or a woman, frankly, or any other gender.
Agreed. It's just common courtesy. Okay. It's nice to hold the door for people. The problem now is that it can be misconstrued as you making a judgment call towards another human being.
Right.
For instance, if you're unsure of what gender somebody is and you open the door for them, you might not mean this, but they could say, "Well, you're making a judgment call about me being a certain gender." Also, "Hey, look, I can open the door for myself. I don't need your help."
Of course.
And also, it could actually indicate romantic interest. You had talked before, or mentioned before, chivalry. It could be a chivalrous thing to do, to open the door for a woman. That's not at all what I was thinking when we were talking about this podcast. I was just talking about social norms and how dangerous it is to not know these ever-changing social norms, particularly if you're a little bit older like us.
Really, really difficult. Now, I have to say, I've never, in all my years of dating, now, I've been with somebody for 3 years now, over 3 years now. So recently, I haven't had to worry about that type of thing. But I've never had somebody react badly to me opening a car door or paying a check or what some of the things that people think of as, hey, that, you know, that could be dicey now. I have never had a negative reaction in a dating scenario, which I'm grateful for, because that's just how I was brought up and I was told to be that way, and it feels comfortable to me, and I like putting somebody before me. And
yeah, absolutely, I agree. Look, my relationship with my wife, we expect certain behaviors out of each other, and I think we should. We like it. It's a mutual relationship. She expects and I expect. For instance, if I don't hold the door for her, she can say, hey, come on. And honestly, I want to hold the door for her. So it's a mutual thing. And for us, it enhances our relationship.
Yeah, me too.
Another thing that I have written down here is respecting your elders. That's something that in our age group, for sure, it was something that was taught. It's something that was expected of us. And part of that respect, honestly, is giving elders a little bit of leeway as to their manners and their social decorum. So perhaps someone who's older will say or do something that was acceptable many, many years ago that's not quite as acceptable now.
We can't bust heads like we used to, but we have our ways.
Oh, you got it.
One trick is to tell them stories that don't go anywhere. Like the time I caught the ferry over to Shelbyville, I needed a new heel for my shoe. So I decided to go to Morganville, which is what they call Shelbyville in those days. So I tied an onion to my belt, which was the style at the time. Now, to take the ferry cost a nickel, and in those days, nickels had pictures of bumblebees on them. Give me 5 bees for a quarter, you'd say. Now, where were we? Oh, yeah. The important thing was that I had an onion on my belt, which was a style at the time.
And would be something that you wouldn't accept if it was someone that was younger that was saying or doing those things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. Like, when I think about some of the things my grandparents said when I was younger, and I know what good people they were, there was just different language to describe different things. And boy, if I really wanted to go down that road, it would be like, wow, how is that okay? But it just was.
Yeah. A great example of that is Bugs Bunny. I grew up watching Bugs Bunny.
Me too.
And there are certainly things in Bugs Bunny that are not acceptable at all right now.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly if you talk about racial stereotypes.
You know what this conversation reminds me of? Do you remember A Bronx Tale? It was with Robert De Niro and his son was kind of growing up around gangsters. Do you remember that at all?
No, I never saw it.
All right. There's a scene in there where the gangster who's taken his son C under his wing is showing him or telling him how to know whether the girl that you're dating is the right girl, is somebody or somebody you should drop. And what he says is, and I've used this, I'd used this growing up. This made such an impression on me. When you get out of your car door and you're going up to somebody's house, you lock your car door, the driver's side door, and then you get the girl. He says you bring her to the car, you open the door, you let her get in, you shut the door, and then you watch her. If she doesn't unlock your door for you, you drop her. That was
wow.
And yet, I think I did that a few times when I was in my like early 20s. Like,
oh, man.
Now, you can't do that now, of course, because we've got power locks. So don't expect anybody to reach over. But I mean, that just goes to show you, you know, how things can change so quickly. And the interesting thing was that was actually in that movie, that was an interracial relationship. They were making commentary on a lot of different things in that moment. But
was it Irish Italian?
No.
Well, that was considered interracial in the 1930s and 40s. So Nonetheless, perhaps some history will help shed some light on this topic. If you will, let's travel back to 13,000 BCE, Goff's Cave, England.
Wow, you are taking us way back, dude. All right, go ahead.
I thought you'd get a kick out of that. In this cave, there are amazingly detailed paintings of daily life.
Okay.
So with archaeology and these paintings, we get a very vivid depiction of what daily life was like for a caveman. Apparently, they domesticated dogs already.
Wow.
We also see from these pictures that they seem to be quite open sexually, having multiple partners and not being ashamed of their sexuality. And unfortunately, some of the pictures depict willing and unwilling participants.
Well, how could you tell they were unwilling in a painting?
You'd have to see those cave drawings yourself. I'd rather not go into detail.
Okay, that sounds really bad, but go ahead.
It truly is. There are even paintings that show that our toilet habits have changed quite drastically. It seemed that back then, evacuating yourself in a public setting was acceptable.
Wow.
It also seemed that cannibalism wasn't frowned on back then. It seems that they had a tendency to eat their defeated enemies and even made serving bowls out of their discarded skulls. Isn't that pleasant?
They were showing this in the paintings you're talking about?
Yeah, actually, they show it in the paintings. Actually, do you know the cannibal joke? There's two cannibals eating a clown?
No.
You don't know that?
What is it?
So two cannibals are sitting together. They're feasting on a clown. One cannibal looks at the other and says, "Does this taste funny to you?" Okay. So I bring this up because it's clear that these cavemen have very different behavior than we have. What was acceptable for them, not so acceptable for us. Okay. Let's fast forward to between 200 and 375 BCE and 200 and 350 BCE. Tehotep, the pharaoh's chief advisor, writes what's considered to be the very first book. This is a book that lists civil virtues, such as truthfulness, kindness, self-control, listening to other people, being aware of the imperfections of human knowledge, as well as the importance of avoiding open conflict.
Oh. Well, I'm going to take you off the rails here. Was that the code of Hammurabi, or was Hammurabi the really violent code? You know, an eye for an eye kind of code. I don't remember.
No, this is different. This is okay. Egypt. I think the code of Hammurabi is Babylonian, and it's like 1,000 or 2,000 years later, maybe 1,500, somewhere in there, BC. Now, you could also think of Confucius as a teacher of morality and behavior.
Wow, that's interesting. I never thought of Confucius as a morality guy. I mean, it's philosophy for sure, but I guess you're right. It can be considered morality.
If you think of it, he spoke of both civic government and personal beliefs, meaning he spoke about morality, he spoke about the pursuit of justice, and he spoke about sincerity in all your relationships. Now, if we fast forward, let's speak about Rome. You know we love Rome.
Some more than others, apparently.
So, hygiene becomes very important, which in no small part is due to the aqueducts and the availability of water. People begin to take frequent baths and even start brushing their teeth. Unfortunately, it seems that they brush their teeth with crushed bones and often even horse urine, so that's pretty disgusting. But at least it's a beginning. The other thing that's common is the removing of nasal hair for men. Isn't that nice? There are now public laws that try to govern men's behavior towards women of certain classes, both patrician and plebeian women, although it's open season on slaves in Rome. I think one of the reasons people change their behaviors is to differentiate themselves from the others, the barbarians, the people that lived above the olive line, the line where olive trees can grow. Those were the others. We wanted to make sure we are different. All right, let's get into our time machine and head to France, 1152, and meet up with Ellen of Aquitaine. She just married Henry II of England and is shocked at his manners. In an effort to teach Henry and the men of his court the proper way to treat a woman, she employs a troubadour to compose love songs that subtly hint at how a man should behave towards a woman. These songs speak about how men should honor the dignity of women and moderate their sexual impulses. She's considered to be one of the first people to speak of chivalry.
I love it. She's in my wheelhouse.
A mere 50 years later, In England, Daniel of Beccles writes The Book of the Civilized Man, which is a poem that basically teaches etiquette. Things like, if you need to belch, look to the ceiling.
Pardon me for being rude, it was not me, it was my food. It just popped up to say hello, and now it's gone back down below.
not cover your mouth, not...
No,
you know,
just look to just the ceiling, and okay. Everything is fine.
All right,
don't
I like
look
it.
Too closely at a woman's dress. This is not proper.
Fair enough, fair enough. But always comment on her shoes.
Also, try not to pester women. It's really not a nice thing to do. Another one that's a very good rule is try not to attack someone while they're defecating. Wait till they're done, and then you can beat the living hell out of them.
Yeah, that's common courtesy.
I think it is. Another rule that I think is really important, don't openly excavate your nostrils in public. If you need to pick your nose, please do it in a private place.
Unless, of course, you're walking in a desert.
True, in a desert, there really isn't many private places. But then, probably not a lot of people, right? And let's hope that your nose isn't all that full when you're in that desert. Let's fast forward to Murano, Italy, 1450, Venice. In an effort to teach men to moderate their strength, glassmakers make an incredibly delicate drinking glass. This glass is supposed to teach men that it's okay to be gentle. It also helps men moderate their drinking, as well as the effect their strength has on others. Since we're in Italy, why don't we hop on Catherine de' Medici's carriage and head to France, where she marries Henry II of France. Not overly thrilled with the local cuisine, she brings with her some of the recipes of her homeland, Italy, and is credited for the beginning of French cuisine. Also surprised at the table manners of the court, she brings a brand new invention, the fork.
Really?
Yes, really. She hopes this invention will help to teach moderation and also help Henry to stop playing with his food. 250 years later, Swiss philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau turns the civilized world on its head by writing The Discourse of Inequality. In it, he teaches that living in a state of nature is far superior to living the way the Parisians do of the time. High court, with etiquette and manners. No, this wasn't the right way to live. In fact, the civilized man, the simple man, is without the sins of what he terms the over-civilized man is. This is where we get the thought of the decline of Western civilization. The thought that when we were hunter-gatherers, we were without fakery, we were innocent and curious, not deceitful like the civilized man. He was a huge success. People were astonished to hear this completely different take on the rise of Western civilization. For years, they had been taught that our natural state is wild, violent, and overly sexual, that we needed to be tamed to be able to live with each other. Rousseau's teachings were the exact opposite. And these teachings echo to this very day. Think of casual dress, eating with your fingers. Don't be afraid to say what you think. These are the remnants of Rousseau. Let's jump in our time machine and transport ourselves 267 years into the future. It's March 27th, 2022. We're at the Dolby Theater, celebrating the Oscars. Will Smith just smacked Chris Rock across the face. A beautiful example of Rousseauian's natural man and Hollywood aristocracy. What do you think, Phil?
Well... if somebody thinks that behavior is okay, that is somebody I really would not get along with. I can't imagine somebody reasonable thinking that that's okay. That isn't even okay if you're face-to-face at a party, like hanging out, and somebody makes a joke. You can say to them, I don't appreciate that. Please apologize. And then if they push the issue, then it can escalate into something, perhaps.
I get it. I agree. But the other side of the story, I think, is Will Smith is just standing up for his wife, and Chris Rock was obnoxious for telling that joke.
What do you think about the joke first? Let's talk about the joke then.
All right. I'm actually playing devil's advocate a little bit here, so I'm giving the other side. Personally, I don't think the joke was a big deal. Look, these are two people, Will Smith and his wife, that live in rarefied air. They are the incredibly lucky. They're at the Oscars. Chris Rock is a comedian, and it's his job to tell jokes.
Yeah.
I really don't think the joke was anything that required that type of reaction. And honestly, I think Will Smith looked like an incredible bully. Look at Chris Rock. He's 140 pounds, 5'6". He's a little guy. And Will Smith is twice his size. He looked like a bully, and it was awful to see on TV.
We didn't mean to go down this road, but...
Well, the reason I brought it up is because it's an example of a utterly different way to behave in public. Yeah. And what is acceptable now and how much that's changed. And the fact that some people think that that was an acceptable thing to do.
So I'm going to throw a little history at you since we're in the history and we were talking about this, and I am obsessed. I love chivalry. I love anything King Arthur, anything the Three Musketeers, you know, all of those stories. That's the stuff I gravitate towards. I, for some reason, the idea of standing up for the weak and being kind, like you said, and having manners, all of that means a lot to me.
And that's honestly, that's why I've always tried to stand up for you.
I know.
It's mostly because of your lack of upper body strength.
That's insane. But go ahead, keep thinking that. That's fine.
I will.
So a little bit about chivalry. Chivalry really came from the French term chevalier, which means knight. But it started from servants, like knights, when they were on horseback. They needed to be tamed. They needed to be taught. Very similar to some of the things you were saying. They needed to be educated so they didn't run wild because they had so much power. They had so much authority. So there became chivalry, these codes of chivalry. The English aristocracy of the Middle Ages are the ones that really put it center stage. And the interesting thing is the position that puts women in, because in one sense, they're revered in the case of chivalry. They're put on a pedestal. But by putting them on that pedestal that you put them on, and this I would have never thought of, you expect them to act then accordingly to their role in a chivalrous society. And therefore, you're constraining them to be a certain way, to behave a certain way in different situations. And so it's while you're trying to elevate them, you're also controlling them. The funny thing is about chivalry, I never looked at it that way until I read this article to kind of prepare for this podcast. And I really thought it was interesting and something to bring up, you know?
So you could say that any type of social decorum, manners, civility, whatever you want to call it, puts a certain amount of constraint on a person.
That's the other side of it, exactly.
Which could mean that you're not always able to be 100% honest with your opinions and your thoughts in a given situation.
100%. So I also dug a little deeper, and I wanted to see, all right, what were the original tenets of chivalry? When they were written down, what was taught, right? So there's something called...
I'm going to interrupt you for a second. Who, yeah, what, sure. Where? Who are we talking about and when?
The first person who really wrote them down was somebody named Leon Gauthier.
When? When was this?
I don't know the date offhand. It's probably in the article. I could look it up for you.
Yeah, unfortunately, your grade's going to be affected by that. So, well, go on.
So, number one is believe in the church's teachings and observe all the church's directions. So you can see that's number one.
Which, to me, has nothing to do with chivalry at all.
Well, exactly. That's why it's interesting. So you can see it was the church trying to control people's behavior or trying to tame people's behavior.
Which, in part, is controlling sexual urges.
Well, it's saying observe the church's directions first. That's the first thing.
Yeah, but if you think back to the fact that most marriages at that point were arranged, controlling sexual urges for the church is pretty important.
So this is certainly the Middle Ages. So two, defend the church. Three, respect and defend the weak.
Which, again, I always try to do for you. I never knew how chivalrous I was towards you.
Well, clearly you've had a crush for years. Four, love your country. Five, do not fear your enemy, which all of this is like, it really surprised me because it's not the way I think of chivalry, right? Six, show no mercy and do not hesitate to make war with the infidel. That's number six in the code of chivalry, the original code of chivalry. Number seven, perform all feudal duties as long as they do not conflict with the laws of God. So God above man in every sense. right?
Of course, yeah. Fear of God is a big thing with the church as well.
Absolutely. Never lie or go back on one's word. Okay, that can be translated. Be generous, that can be translated. Always and everywhere be right and good against evil and injustice. As it went on, it got sort of refined into really five codes that were taught. The five were really fear, and they're similar. Fear God and his church. Serve the liege Lord in valor and faith. Protect the weak and defenseless. Live by honor and for glory. And respect the honor of women. So that is more like if you move into the Three Musketeer era, that's sort of their code, right? Because I'm so obsessed with chivalry, my list, really, that sounded like my list that I like to end the episodes with. But this is my real list. 20 examples of modern chivalry okay. you need in your life.
And pray tell, where did you find this list?
This is a website called bold.com. Uh-huh. So it's really directed at women for how to date and what to expect from men.
Makes sense that you've been looking at these websites. Okay.
It's never bad to stay informed, Tomas. It's like reading Cosmo. So number one, he calls when he says he will. Fair enough. Number two, he checks you got home safe. I really like that one. It's something that I always think about. You know, Stacy and I were at a wedding over the weekend, and we were in a property, very, you know, safe property. But whenever it was time to go back to the room, I wanted to walk with her just in case. You know, you never know. I mean,
it was a nice area, but there were some bandits. So you better safe than sorry.
I know, it's ridiculous. I'm sure she would have been fine. She can take care of herself, but that's something that I think about all the time. He texts during the day.
That's something to be avoided or something that's acceptable?
That's good. That's good. Oh, you want, like, okay. He texts you during the day.
Could be annoying. Depends. Let's see. But all right.
He turns his phone off or puts it away when he's with you. That's a big... I don't think anybody does that. How many times have you gone to a restaurant and seen people either talking on their cell phones or sitting with their cell phones on the table just waiting?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a real red flag if someone's not paying attention to you at all and just looking at their cell phone.
Absolutely. Next one is he's open about his intentions, which I think is sort of old school chivalrous. You know, when you first meet, you court and you say that you're courting.
Can you imagine? I really intend to sleep with you tonight, so I just want to let you know right in the beginning. Let's just get that open, and I want to make sure you're aware.
There are certain things that can go unsaid, right?
Yeah, but it could also be, let's tame it down a little bit. This is all about marriage for me, so just want to let you know.
I've had that on dates. I've had girls say stuff like that to me on a first date. I had one girl tell me that she froze her eggs because she was in her 30s.
Oh, my God.
On the first date. It was wild. I was like, well, okay. You know, I know she wants to have kids, but that's fine. You know, we'll move on.
Well, that could be good, but let's say you're just a little bit interested, you're unsure, that could probably scare you off, you would think.
If you're commitment phobic at all, it's going to terrify you to have that conversation, yeah.
You would think.
I agree. So then he calls instead of texts, which is interesting because earlier they said he texts you during the day. So I don't know why they're saying that, but he cleans up nicely. He is well-groomed when he comes to see you, in other words. He pays the bill. This is modern day, which I found interesting. I did not think that would be in there. He walks you to the front door. He kisses you on the forehead. I'm not sure what that is all about.
That's a little weird. So he treats you like a child is what they're
right.
saying.
I'm not your daughter, you fool.
Yeah, exactly.
He cooks you dinner. That's very chivalrous.
I question the websites you're getting this information from.
I did not say you have to abide by all these.
For everyone that's listening, this is a website that is visited by Phil and one other guy. Oh,
it is not meant for men, this website.
And he pays for the website.
Well, at this point, it's a business expense, so we're all good. All right, back to the list. He brings you thoughtful gifts. I don't buy that. He walks closest to the road. That I get. So when you're walking and there's traffic, you're the one on the outside. So if something were to happen, the girl is protected or the person you're walking with is protected.
And that's most of the time, that's natural for most men. Whoever it is, your mom, your wife, your girlfriend, a child.
Absolutely. He doesn't eye other women when you're out.
You think?
Now that that is something that needs to be learned, because that is not a natural thing for a young man. You know, a young man typically will notice his beauty.
But not on a first date, man.
And I'm sure women do too, but women are much better at early on learning how to hide it.
Okay.
Social decorum.
That's it. Social decorum. As I said before, don't stare too closely at a woman's dress.
That's right. He's nice to your parents. That's a great one. That's a great indicator. By the way, another great indicator just on that subject is when you meet somebody, how they treat their own parents is a real indication of what kind of person they are.
Unless their parents are psychotic murderers, then it's okay if you do treat them poorly. Where's humor on this list?
For chivalry? How is humor chivalrous?
I fell in love with my wife, but not only because of how she looks, because of how funny she is. Tracy's one of the most brilliantly funny human beings I've ever met in my life. So humor for me is really high on the list.
Absolutely. But how is that chivalrous?
Because humor can attract someone to somebody else. So that should be high on the list.
For me too, obviously. Humor is a huge part of why you fall in love with somebody, without a doubt. But I don't consider that in the world of chivalry.
Okay. Well, man, the deal's off with me if I'm not laughing.
Well, like, for example, if you ask someone what's a chivalrous quality, I don't think they're going to say his sense of humor is chivalrous. But anyway, he gives you real compliments. That's chivalrous, I'd say. Yeah.
Like, no? I really, really love that 10-gallon hat you're wearing.
So you could say, hey, you're really funny. And then you've got your humor in there and you're giving a compliment. There you go.
Yeah, if she is.
Right. He lets you order first.
She'll have the surf and turf and the 40-ounce Shirley Temple.
No, it didn't say order for her.
I'm confusing you, Phil. I'm turning it around. My brilliance.
The last one, and this is a good one, he introduces you. I have been with guys or met friends of mine who were with their girlfriend, who I hadn't met yet, and I have to introduce myself to the girlfriend. And you could always see it on their face. They're pissed.
I'm so bad with names that I often forget who I'm with. So if I've ever done that to you, it's unacceptable. It's a very bad sign. You shouldn't be my friend. You deserve better.
All right. Well, anyway, that is my list for today. And this was a fun, really fun conversation. Great job on the history, as always, Tomas.
Back at you.
Thank you.
And we will reconvene in 1 week.
We are the Jocular Pugilists. You can support us by going to Apple Podcasts, and you can leave a rating and review, 5-star, hopefully. Leave something funny in the ratings. We will be reading those for sure in our Thanksgiving episode, without doubt. You can also, now Spotify has something new. They have a star rating. You can not only follow, but you can 5-star rate on Spotify. So you can also find us on Facebook at The Jocular Pugilists. You can find us on our website at thejocularpugilists.com. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram. We will be on YouTube soon. We will be coming to you with products. Very exciting stuff in the works. So thank you.
We're just in need of a time machine to get all these things done at this point.
Yep, that's it. It's really all about time for us at this point. But thank you for all the support. You've been really, really terrific. So far, the numbers are going up. Another way you can help us out is tell your friends about the podcast. Tell people how much you enjoy listening, and maybe we'll get them listening too. Anyway, thank you so much, Tomas. Great to see you as always. I do hate you, but I hate you a little less today.
Well, it's been a pleasure conversing with you in this podcast. And remember, with every ending comes a new beginning.
Very, very, very good manners. Thank you.
Of course. I bid thee farewell.
I'll see you next time.
Well, I'm upper class, high society. God's gift to ballroom notoriety. And I always fill my ballroom. The event is never small. The social pages say I've got the biggest balls of all. I've got big balls, I've got big balls. They're such big balls, and they're dainty big balls. And he's got big balls, and she's got big balls.
But we've got the biggest balls of them all.
And my balls are always bouncing, and my ballroom always full, and everybody comes and comes again.